The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
We were talking earlier on with Lavinia Kerwick, who is the rape victims campaigner, about this new O'Malley report published this morning. A broad report on how we can make the criminal process for sexual assault and rape cases better for victims and indeed for those who may be ultimately found not guilty or have been accused in the wrong. It's a very wide-ranging report, and the best way to deal with it is to speak to the barrister who drafted it, Tom O'Malley, who is on the line now. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jonathan.
Lots of discussion around identification of alleged rapists or people who commit sexual assault. I'll get to that in just a minute, because for me, and having spoken to Lavinia Kerwick, it's what happens in the court that is equally, if not more, important, and how we change the process, which right now is very difficult for victims of sexual assault. What have you proposed in this report that might make for a better experience, if you can call it that, if cases do get as far as a courtroom?
Well, I mean, there's a range of issues here. I suppose one thing I should say, one of the things we point out in the report at the outset, is that in recent years, a lot of improvements have been made, both in terms of the law and in terms of practice in the way the cases are dealt with. I realise, because I do recall Lavinia's case very, very well, back in the early 1990s. And of course, things were an awful lot worse then than they are now. And there were protections that are available now that weren't available then. But that's not to say that the system is perfect by any means. And what we're trying to do here is, I suppose, a range of issues. I mean, we are inspired, first of all, by the Victims Act of 2017 and also the EU Directive on Victims' Rights, which that's based on, and which is absolutely insistent, you know, that victims must be treated with respect and courtesy and dignity. And there is a provision in the Victims Act which specifically allows a judge to ensure that victims, or any person indeed, who is called upon to give evidence, is not treated in any kind of oppressive way. In addition to that, we are making strong recommendations in relation to having training for everybody involved. That would be for judges, for lawyers, and indeed for anybody who's dealing in a professional capacity with victims of sexual crime. And among the other things that we're dealing with or recommending is that this would apply, if you like, in a rape case like that, Lavinia Kerwick was the complainant in. But in relation to many cases, one thing, it can be particularly traumatic, let's say, for somebody who is a child or who has a mental disability or physical disability and who is called upon to give evidence. And it's very important that they have assistance, and therefore we're recommending that there be, you know, quite an effective system of intermediaries put in place who can assist people to give evidence if they have difficulties of any kind in communicating. Okay. And that should help in a considerable way.
Tom, I might just ask you if you can make sure that that mouthpiece is as close to your mouth as possible, because it's a little bit of interference on the line, if that's possible. One of the things you decided against recommending, which was the introduction of counsel to represent victims. So in other words, that there would be another barrister in the court representing the interests of the complainant. Because it is a combative place and it can be very lonely and isolating, and while the DPP is there, they're bringing a case on behalf of the people. They're not bringing a case on behalf of you. You decided against that. Why?
Well, a number of reasons. First of all, it's not true to say that the victim is always deprived of counsel. I mean, if one of the most important decisions that's very often taken in the course of a rape trial from the victim's point of view is where an application is made to question her, and it usually will be a female, or could be a male as well, about her previous sexual experience. And there was a time in it when that used to be a very, very traumatic aspect of the trial for victims. Since 2001, you know, a victim is entitled to be separately represented by counsel when such an application is being made. Now, we're making a number of recommendations, I can go into them if you want, to strengthen that system even further. But one of the things, a number of issues came together in terms of the recommendation that we make about the victim's access to legal advice throughout the whole process. First of all, prosecuting counsel do actually attend, you know, to victims very conscientiously nowadays. The Director of Public Prosecutions, for example, has a system in place of what they call a court familiarisation programme, where the victim is brought to court before the trial just to see the layout of the court, where the different parties will be based, what her role is, and so on. Now, of course, there can never be any question whatsoever of coaching a victim as to what answers she should give or what questions she might be asked.
They can be made familiar with the surroundings, which is important. But
exactly.
all of that is laudable and admirable, but it won't amount to much if somebody still has to stand and during cross-examination by the defence barrister is asked about the type of clothes that they were wearing on the night and whether that might have had anything to do with what happened. We have to get to a position where that no longer happens in our courts.
Yes, and hopefully, I mean, first of all, it very, very rarely happens indeed. But what we have to try to do is put a set of measures in place. I mean, I have to say this much, you see, and I agree with you absolutely, and that's written into the Victims Act and has been said several times by the courts themselves, you know, that, you know, what a victim was wearing or the fact that they went back to somebody's house after a party or whatever is not under any circumstances whatsoever to be equated with consent to sexual activity. Incidentally, one of the things we're doing in this report is recommending that there be, you know, a very sustained effort made to educate the public, not just students and so on, the public at large, about the meaning and the significance of consent. But one of the other things that we're doing is recommending training. And I think that's vitally important, just to ensure that there's training for everybody involved in sex offence cases, judges, lawyers and others, who are made aware of things like rape myths, for example, made aware of the trauma that people can be suffering at the time that they report the matter to the Gardaí, and indeed very often are continuing to suffer by the time that the case comes out for trial.
The complainant, and again, I'm conscious of time here, the complainant is entitled to the best defence that can be put forward. And if the best defence that can be put forward includes things that you and I would find onerous and offensive, is it not the responsibility of the defence still to introduce them to evidence?
Well, yes. I mean, so you're saying, I think what you meant there is that the defendant is entitled to the best defence.
Correct. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, of course. And well, that's one of the things. I mean, if we had more time to discuss it, we'd go into that in more detail. But of course, one of the things we had to do with the report, and we make this very clear in the opening chapters, is that we have to be conscious of the fact that, you know, the most important feature of a trial under the Constitution is a fair trial for the accused. And what we're trying to do with this report is to make the experience of the victim as, if you like, least stressful as possible, without encroaching on the accused person's right to a fair trial. We simply cannot encroach on that right because it's written into the Constitution, okay, and it's written into the European Court of Human Rights. But, I mean, you're right in the sense that, you know, it will all, you know, being a witness in any criminal case is very stressful. It is particularly stressful in the case of sexual offences, and that's why we considered, and the Minister considered, that it was worth a detailed report like this.
Okay.
And indeed, there is now going to be a 10-week implementation period where the various recommendations will be implemented, if at all possible.
Finally, and briefly, if we can, talk about the anonymity thing. This came about as a result of a Belfast case where people who were accused of rape are still identified in court in the same way that other criminal accused are. In this jurisdiction, we have very strict reporting rules that you're not allowed to identify people who were accused of rape, but it was a lot grayer when you were talking about people who were accused of sexual assault, and that made for crime reporting quite difficult. The recommendation here is that anonymity is given to everybody, and you might just explain the logic behind that and how that might end up benefiting everybody in this process.
Well, first of all, what we're recommending isn't at all dramatic, if you like, because already the vast majority of defendants in sex offence cases are entitled to anonymity if they are during the trial. Obviously, they lose that anonymity if they are convicted, unless to name them would also identify the victim. As it happens, for some peculiar reason, persons accused of sexual assault only, it doesn't matter what court they were tried in, don't have that right to anonymity. Our view was that, you know, given the serious stigma that can attach to being accused of any sex offence, whether it is serious or not so serious, you know, can be very, very significant indeed. It can be life-lasting, even if the person is acquitted. And therefore, you know, it's not a question, of course, of saying that the person has lifelong anonymity. They can be, of course, named if they are convicted. So it's more a deferral of naming them rather than a complete prohibition. Again, they shouldn't, I think, in fairness, be named if they are acquitted. And, of course, there can be no question of naming them if to do so might identify the victim.
Okay. All right, we leave it there. It's a very interesting study. Tom O'Malley, hopefully it will receive a good hearing by the Oireachtas when they are considering changing legislation on this. And we heard the Minister's comments on News Talk Breakfast this morning. Barrister and lecturer at NUI Galway, Tom O'Malley. Thank you.